Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Dr. Christine Sterling, a board-certified OBGYN who I absolutely adore. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here and to chat with you. Really been looking forward
Same.
To this.
Same. I really appreciate your approach and the work that you do to serve people during pregnancy, but in a way that you kind of are helping to alleviate some of the stress and the anxiety. And I know that you left your practice in 2019 because you really loved that time, that patient-centered care, but you had shared that, you know, with only 10 minutes, you can't do all that you love. So now you've built this amazing platform online, and I love everything that I learned that you share openly and for free on Instagram. And you had me on recently on an Instagram Live, and we've connected, and I just really love your approach and your work to be size inclusive. So I'm so thrilled for this opportunity to have this conversation, because it's providers like you that I'm like, oh, I just want to pick your brain. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, of course. And I think that I am so happy to have found you. I wanted to create a reel on Instagram with people, like, you know, in larger bodies in pregnancy, and really celebrate that, because I'm a firm believer that you can have a healthy pregnancy at any size, right? And so I basically wanted to create a reel to that effect. And so I use a tool, an online tool called Canva, to make some of my content for Instagram.
Same here.
And I was just like, where are all the plus size pregnancy bodies? Like, where are all these other bodies? Like, everybody's got this like perfect basketball bub, you know? And so I reached out to my community on Instagram, and I said, hey, if anybody feels comfortable sending me, you know, if you're a plus size person, or you're, you know, a person in a larger body and you have any pregnancy photos, I'd love to, you know, use them, because I cannot find them on Canva. And then people sent me your information, and I just like went on your two accounts and just started gobbling up your wisdom and your information. And I'm blown away by you as well. I mean, you're just...
Oh, well, thank you. But I love that you took that step, right, of wanting to be size inclusive. And I got to tell you, stock photos have come a long way in the decade that I've been doing this work. There are more now, but they're still incredibly limited. But that didn't stop you, that you then went to your community. And that's a really prime example for any providers listening and in any field that, you know, your community wants to be represented and wants to be seen. And your community is built of people of all different shapes, sizes, colors, and abilities. Yeah. And we need to reach out more and not feel limited by what is very limited online as far as inclusivity, especially for people of size and people of different abilities. So I love that you did that. So thank you.
Yeah, it was so fun. And I can't tell you, like, still to this day, when I watch that reel, I get teared up. And so many members of my community, like, it really brought out the emotions, because it's just not okay that, like, we don't see that celebrated, right? And gosh, pregnancy is just so hard in and of itself. And then when you add the fat phobia of our culture and the medical system to that, it's just heartbreaking, and it's not okay. And so the more we can kind of come together, I'm still learning and educating myself, but, like, you know, as my personality, my tendency is, as I learn and as I grow, I always want to share that. And there are, even though my platform is really geared towards pregnant people and not necessarily medical providers and healthcare providers, I know that there's a lot of medical students and residents who follow me. And so I take that seriously, that, you know, I want to show both that it's okay to be learning, right? And I think that's can be a little bit of a problem for those of us who are in the healthcare space, especially physicians, because we have this feeling like we have to have it all figured out, because we're kind of either put on a pedestal or we're put on a pedestal in a way that we don't want to show that we have vulnerabilities and we make mistakes and we don't know things and we're growing, you know?
Totally. Yes. I mean, I'm the first to say I'm even still unpacking my own fat phobia and I exist in a larger body and do this work. But the fact is that we're doing the work, right? We want to create change.
Yeah.
And one thing that you and I have talked about is coming together, like you as an OBGYN and me as a patient advocate and also a certified childbirth educator, but we're both moms too. Like, we want the same thing. We want people to feel empowered throughout their pregnancy, to receive evidence-based information in a compassionate and transparent way. Yeah. But there seems to be this divide. So I would love to dig into that with you. I think this is going to be, dare I say, fun, because I'm excited for it. But it's a conversation I've been wanting to have with a care provider for a long time, because it feels like up until relatively recently, the power dynamic has always been doctor knows best. And now with the internet and Google, you know, we have so much vast more access to information. You don't have to spend hours reading a book to learn about different things. You can have it at your fingertips. And there's also been a big push, especially in the, you know, fat activist community of, hey, we're sick and tired of being shamed and being mistreated. And now we have the evidence to prove that we're being mistreated and that it's leading to really poor outcomes, including death. And so this is serious. Yeah. And so now people are, you know, building brick walls with care providers and saying no a lot, which in some aspects is great. But in some ways, I'm seeing a shift where people aren't being open-minded to evidence-based recommendations or just being like, well, I'm never going to be weighed at the doctor's office. And my approach is always first and foremost, like as a mentally competent adult, you get to make your own decisions and those should be respected. But let's take a breath and let's unpack why you're feeling this way and that there are certain times when it can be important to get a weight or to, you know, listen to your care provider about things that might be uncomfortable or have conversations about how your weight might have some increased risk. And I always want to provide evidence-based information. That's really important to me. And some conversations are a little bit of a tightrope for even me to walk as a fat advocate too. So I would love to hear, you know, your view on all this, but also like you've been trained in a certain way in all of your years of schooling around bodies and people of size and obesity. I see a shift happening in the medical community of how we're even training care providers around fat phobia now that probably wasn't happening when you were in school. So there's so many doctors that have been practicing for so long that have certain things ingrained upon them. So I'm gabbing on because I'm so excited. So I'm going to stop and pause, Dr. Sterling, and let you take over and let's have this conversation.
I'm not, I wouldn't call myself a recent graduate from medical school, but I graduated medical school in 2012. So, you know, about 10 years ago. And I will say that I learned in medical school about fat phobia. I learned about the data on what happens that, you know, we use the term in medicine when I was in medical school about patients who are obese and their risks of, you know, not coming to the doctor and all of that. I don't use the term obese anymore. I've heard the loud and clear from members of, you know, the plus size community, larger body community, that is a term that it seems like a lot of people have a problem with that term. So I'm going to, you know, but that's what we talked about in medical school. So I did learn about that. And so I think that understanding that medical training has two components. There's a learning that you do in the classroom. And I went to the University of Southern California for medical school. And it's actually a pretty progressive medical school in terms of talking about, we're in East LA, that's where the medical school is based. And so the majority of our patients were larger bodied, and they had, you know, a lot of other challenges in life. I learned a lot of that, but what happens is that, you know, even once you leave the classroom's kind of a place where the, you know, people who are really on the kind of the cutting edge of what is you know, ethically right in medicine and what is just. And, you know, just the people who are in medical schools, at least in my medical school, were very justice minded. We're very wanting us to graduate and be physicians who embraced diversity and who treated everybody with kindness and compassion. And, you know, we had a big emphasis on serving the underserved at my medical school.
Wow.
So there's that component. And so I think medical schools, I can't speak for all of them, but a lot of them are doing a pretty good job there. But then you go out and you get your hands-on training. And that's when you're really being exposed to the whole spectrum, right? You're being exposed to physicians who trained many, many years ago and have never even thought about fat phobia.
Yeah.
The word is not something. And so there's this, you know, it's this, and it's a very, it's a pretty, truthfully, training in medicine is a pretty toxic culture. Mm-hmm. And it's come a long way, but it still has a long way to go. And so then it's very hierarchical. Yeah. So the people you're surrounded with, like if you're attending is like really fat phobic, or your residents are fat phobic, and like this is the kind of the environment you're in, it's just human nature that you kind of, even if you initially have a resistance to some of these messages because you've gotten proper education and training in your medical school, if you are repeatedly exposed to these things, it can change how you see it. And there's this definite mentality in medicine because we are worked so hard of an us versus them. So like physicians kind of band together, physicians and nurses sometimes are included that. And it's like us against the patients because the patients are just coming at us nonstop. And it's that kind of, it's a problem, right? Like that we're so overworked that we have this siege mentality of like, we are under siege. And the enemy is all the patients that are coming at us, and we don't have enough time or really enough energy in ourselves to meet their needs. And then it becomes a like, I don't know. It's one of the reasons why, you know, part of the reason why what I really didn't like about medical culture is I didn't like the us versus them mentality, but it's just human nature. Like it's all, physicians are highly human, and, we don't always see physicians as human, but we are.
Yeah. But all of that makes me like want you back in the hospital providing this amazing care that is like patient. I'm like, well, this was a lot. And now like, how do we fix it? You know, like how do we find people like you when we are only given such a short amount of time? And I ask people for questions before we started recording, and a lot of questions were just like, all my care provider tells me to do is lose weight. And there was even someone said about they have intermenstrual spotting, and her provider said mm-hmm. that weight loss might help with that. I just think it's so hard for you to be able to have deeper conversations and really address all of your concerns and questions when you're only given 10 minutes and people of size are often met with, we'll just lose weight. This will just fix it all. And there's so much missed and so much harm being done. And then when we also have this happening during pregnancy, when weight loss should not be a focus and overall health and well-being should be the focus, there's so much harm happening. How can we work together better?
Listen, I think that, you know, there's the reason why I'm on this side of things now. So I had a big decision to make, right? When medicine was clearly not working out for me for a number of reasons. I basically saw that I had three options. I could go back and do academics and try to touch the, you know, the medical students and the residents and try to make change that way. I could start a private practice that was cash only, so I could actually spend time with patients, because the reason why we don't have time with patients is really, I mean, it's true in countries that have managed care and one payer systems. And it's true in countries like ours that have insurance companies, for-profit insurance companies, because, you know, the bottom dollar matters in both of those situations. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, if you have, there's lots of, I mean, places like, I'm in San Diego and I'm from LA. So there's lots of, you know, really fancy concierge practices where they can spend all of the time because they are not, they can charge whatever they need to keep the roof over their head and to pay their staff and to do all of that. And so that was option number two. And then option number three was, okay, can I have connections with people online with my membership? I'm able to talk to people about their health and then empower them to have better conversations with their providers so that they can advocate for themselves. It's really, you know, it's hard to know how to advocate for yourself when you don't understand what's going on behind the scenes and what the mindset of the provider is. Yeah. So I know that there are a lot of physicians, like, for example, the whole issue of intermenstrual spotting with weight. If that provider had enough time, you know, some providers are just going to dismiss people regardless of how much time they have. But I have a fundamental belief that most providers really care. They just do not have enough time to actually sit down and explain why someone's weight may impact something like intermenstrual spotting, right? So that's the problem is that when you just tell someone just lose weight, they think it's just like, they don't understand the underneath, the why. I think explaining the why is so, so critical, because that's how we establish trust. And if you know, we have to meet our patients who are in larger bodies at a different place than somebody who hasn't been subject to a lifetime of shaming and fat phobia. Yeah. We have to work harder to gain trust. And I don't think that we're doing that right now as a specialty in OBGYN, or really in the medical field across the board. It's this idea of treat everybody the same. And I don't think that works, because we need to work harder for the trust of certain, you know, for our Black patients, for our patients in larger bodies. We have to work harder. Yeah,
no, I'm with you. And like, there are certain conversations that are around weight, and I hear from people like, oh, I have the best care provider ever because they haven't brought up my weight once. And I'm like, I don't know that that's the right answer either. I think, you know, for someone who's over the age of 35, there are certain conversations that happen because you're over the age of 35. You can't change your age and when you're pregnant. You can't change your weight when you're pregnant, but there are certain conversations. But I think if we have conversations in a way that are compassionate and encouraging and also empowering, yes, there are increased risks when you exist in a larger body, but the odds of having, you know, a healthy outcome are on your side. And it's just, you know, how do we unpack so many years of diet culture that for many people has, you know, ruined their intuitive relationship with food, you know, and their ability to really listen and know what their body needs and wants. And we so focus on dieting and restriction. And here during pregnancy, it's such an opportunity to really love food in a whole new way without shame. But there's certain conversations that I think are important to be had that I think care providers are now even nervous of, well, how do we even navigate these conversations without making people feel ashamed?
I'm pregnant right now and I'm worried about, you know, I always gain weight. I gain a lot of weight in early pregnancy. My, like, the chart is just like, I shoot up and then I kind of plateau. And I, as an OBGYN, and I have a pretty good relationship with my midwives, and they know me, and they kind of, you know, they know my online presence. And even I'm like, oh God, is somebody going to say something? And, you know, you're thinking about how you're going to justify it. Like, you know, I think that it's just one, there's a lot of, we walk into those rooms with a lot, you know, we bring, you know, body shame, and we bring fear, and we bring all of that into that room. And then the other person who walks into the room, who knows what their experience is, you know what I mean? And who knows what they're walking into that room with, either, you know, a fear of talking about weight, a discomfort with, it's just like, it's this recipe for, you know, when we get, a lot of times when we're afraid and we're anxious, we just don't address it.
We shut down.
You know, so I think that just overall, like, the most important thing that we need to what I hoped to instill, and everybody who's listening, and to the members of my community, both on Instagram and in my membership, is that this is a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
And we, you know, physicians and healthcare providers and patients, it's all about shared decision making. And I really think that if we can both empower patients with knowledge and with an understanding of their bodies and with what their rights are, and we can also really humanize the physician and put us on more level playing field, right? It's a much healthier way to interact and to have a therapeutic relationship. As we are on, you know, it's not me talking down to you and you better do what I say. I mean, it doesn't work. Like, we have a lot of data that nobody follows. Nobody follows our, you know, they don't take our prescriptions. They don't follow our advice. And part of it is because it's this talk down to you. I mean, how many times, I can remember so many times leaving a doctor's office and being like, wait, what are my prescriptions? Like, what cream am I supposed to wear? Like, you know, so it's this, like, this talk down to the patient, or the patient not feeling like they can speak up. It's this whole power dynamic that we really need to shift, because I think as when we work on that power dynamic, we can see the humanity in each other. I think that as a result, we'll feel more comfortable saying, hey, I need to talk to you about your weight at this visit, but I know this could be a sensitive subject. And just, I oftentimes would start the conversations, I'm not saying this is perfect, but saying, like, how are you feeling about your weight? You know, if somebody had gained too much weight, and I have to talk to them about the risks of that, right? Like, I felt like ethically, like, we need to talk about the risks. There's a lot of risks that come with gaining too much weight in pregnancy. I've always gained a little bit too much myself. So, like, I know what it feels like to be worried about that conversation. So I always just started off with a question, like, how do you feel about your weight gain? And just, like, let them kind of, like, unpack, because some people are like, oh, I haven't really thought about it, it is an issue. And other people are like, I've been really nervous that somebody was going to bring it up and I don't know what to do. So it's like just meeting each other where we're at as human beings.
I love that. And I also think normalizing that as a care provider, you're having these conversations with people of all sizes. And I think that's where people's size feels singled out. Like, oh, you're just talking to me about this because I'm of size. And you're like, well, actually, I have patients of size that are losing weight during pregnancy. You know, it's like, it's not just, you know, plus size people.
And we're talking to people who are underweight too, because honestly, a lot of the risks with people who are underweight are even, you know, are bigger than people who are in the overweight category or in, you know, the different categories of BMI. So we are having conversations about weight, and not just in pregnancy, outside of pregnancy, we're having conversations about weight all the time, because it's so linked with our hormones and with our cycle. And trust me, it is, you know, people who have small bodies and who are thin, it's a very different experience from people in larger bodies, but they also have their own stuff. And like, we're not here to compare trauma or whatever, but, you know, it is, we especially as women, we all have a lot of body shame when it comes to the vagina, when it comes to all of it.
And disordered eating histories. Yeah. And the only reason why I brought up losing weight is that it can be common for people of size to lose weight during pregnancy, but that's not also talked about. You know, I just think there's so much that isn't talked about. And when there is only 10 minutes, I mean, that's why I'm really glad to have you on the podcast. And we'll talk at the end about your membership and what you offer too, because I feel like now we really actually need that supplemental additional information. And Google isn't necessarily the place to go for that, especially when you exist in a marginalized or larger body, you know, all of the above, because a lot of the information is stated in a way that's very confusing and triggering. And, you know, you Google onto any of the major health organizations' websites and they're using the word obesity. They're talking about relative risk instead of actual risk. So you're being led to believe that you're, you know, you're basically doomed and gloomed.
Risk will mess you up. I mean, listen, I think it's, you know, I'm not saying that relative risk is, so for those of you who don't know, relative risk is when we compare somebody who, for example, will take hypertension, somebody who has high blood pressure and somebody who doesn't have high blood pressure. And we'll say, oh, if you have high blood pressure, you're at, you know, 20 times the risk of developing this complication, right? And when you hear that, that's just like, that's scary, right? But I'm not saying that there's no role for relative risk. I think that it's an important tool inside of medicine for providers when we are reading studies and everything. But it also, it's a statistics, you can really do anything with numbers. Mm-hmm. And there's this, a lot of medicine tries to kind of scare people into action rather than empower people with more grounded knowledge. We think, like, I think that a lot of people think, like, well, I don't want to downplay it because then they won't take it seriously. And we're pretty used to, like, people not following our recommendations. And so some providers kind of go the fear route to, like, mm-hmm. really press it home. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And a lot of it is physicians not dealing with their own trauma.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can, numbers can be very, very, very deceiving. So I agree with you. I loved you did a great reel about relative risk. And I was like, yes,
we
need to talk about this because statistics can be very, very misleading.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. So, what can people do if they do only have 10 minutes to help to, you know, bridge this gap that we've been talking about and to get the information that they need, but to not feel afraid or like they don't have the ability to speak up for themselves?
I think that's great. And I think it's a little bit of a mindset and perspective shift. I think that the majority of healthcare providers really do care. And they don't always show how they care in the best ways, okay? So, you know, I've had colleagues who I know do a lot of the scare tactics. You know, when somebody's got diabetes and they're maybe not managing it, like their sugars are kind of all over the place. And I know that they're, you know, I've had colleagues who have, you know, self-reported to me that what they said to this patient to try to get them to, you know, be more quote unquote compliant. And I also know that those physicians go home and worry about that patient and are really concerned. So the problem is that a lot of, you know, physicians aren't necessarily always the best communicators, and we have a lot of our own, especially OBGYNs, we have a lot of undealt with trauma. There is, our specialty is actually quite traumatic. And when you, you know, have patients, you know, who have bad outcomes, those things really stick with you years and years later. And it puts you so that if you have a patient who kind of reminds you of a situation that you had even like 5 years ago, had bad outcome, you are suddenly flooded with a lot of fear and you transfer that on to the patient. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think just understanding that your healthcare providers are very, very human and imperfect, but knowing that underneath most of them really are here are our doctors because they care. And when you can tap into that and be very open with them and say, you know, if somebody says something to you that is really triggering or feels really dismissive, being honest with how it made you feel can really pull your physician out of their own headspace and into, okay, this is someone who is across from me and needs my help. So for example, if somebody says something that really makes you feel like ashamed, just saying, I don't know if you intended this or meant this, but I just wanted to share that when you said X, Y, and Z, it made me feel really bad about myself. And I just want to communicate that to you because I think that you, you probably care about me. And I just wanted to share that because I care about this relationship. I care about having a good relationship. And I don't want to go home and be upset about this and not let you know that that bothered me, you know? And I think that every like OBGYN that I know, because they're all my friends, right? all my friends, OBGYNs, would really take that to heart and would really show up in that space and say, wow, like, thank you for being vulnerable with me. I'm really sorry. And that's how we build, right? Even outside then, like really seeing this as a relationship between two humans. And that perspective, I think, can really help people know that you can treat doctors as people and not necessarily just as physicians. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. That makes so much sense. And those I statements, like I'm feeling it, it helps to feel more humanized and you're not attacking, you're addressing. I think that that is so important, but I hear from people all the time, like I just felt like I couldn't say anything in that moment. So maybe sometimes you need to send an email, you know, totally. Or call back later. And
it is not easy to do. I can't tell you how many. So something that I do in my membership is we meet over Zoom a few times a month. And a lot of times that's what we're unpacking is somebody comes and they're like, okay, I had this experience with my provider and now I don't know if I can trust them. But I'm like, you know, I'm 25 weeks. Like, what do I do? Do I change providers? Like what, you know, I'm kind of in this situation and we talk through what to say next time or send an email because I mean, probably even myself, if I had a provider who shamed me in the time, the first time it happened, I probably would not have the wherewithal to say that. Yeah. It would have to be like, okay, if it happened again, like then I might have thought it through and I could actually say it to their face. But I don't want to minimize the fact that that is, especially because we have this power dynamic that has been established, is very, very old. And patriarchal between, you know, the medical system and patients, that is not easy to do. But if you can do it, I think that most of the time you're going to be met with compassion and kindness.
Yeah. And we all need more of that for sure. I so agree. I loved to hear you say earlier that you're working with midwives. So the OB working with midwives and I switched from the obstetrical model of care to midwifery. And it was amazing the difference of 10-minute visits to like 45-minute visits. How can we as consumers, is there anything that we can do as consumers to help change these restrictions with insurance and be able to have access to more time? It is so incredibly frustrating because not everyone can have access to the midwifery model of care. And we have BMI restrictions now in some facilities to midwives. I was just curious, is there anything as consumers that we can do?
I mean, this is such a huge, huge issue. And, you know, I wasn't expecting to be able to go to midwives this pregnancy because I'm advanced maternal age and my last baby was 10 pounds. So I was thinking, I'm like, are they going to let me in this time? Like I was sure that I was going to risk out and that they were going to send me back to the OBs, but I didn't. So I'm able to stay with the midwives, though they're still kind of, even though they're midwives, they're still very much in like a medical model of care. Like my visits are still pretty short, though I'm sure knowing them, they would like go over time if I really needed it, but I'm a pretty easy patient. I'm a pretty easy patient. Yeah. So here's what I'll say. The issue with medical billing is so big. It is Goliath. Okay. And it is very misogynistic. It is horrifically misogynistic. So OBs are just the lowest compensated surgical specialty out there by a lot. Wow. You know, we have, if you look at orthopedic surgeons, I'm from a family of physicians and I have family member, you know, my grandfather was an orthopedic surgeon. His brother is an orthopedic surgeon. I thought I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon. It would have been much better for my bank account if I was, because they're making, you know, sometimes four times what an OBGYN is making. And it's just because it's a male specialty. a lot of male patients, you know, it's interesting, like 50% of the population requires an OBGYN, right? Like at some point, it's very rare that anybody goes an entire life, somebody who has a vagina goes an entire lifetime without seeing an OBGYN, but not everybody is going to need an orthopedic surgeon. And yet, so
right.
How things are billed and, you know, what procedures pay and preventative care pays nothing. I really don't even have the answers because it is, and trust me, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is advocating for this change actively. They're kind of the biggest body that we have to get behind that tries to have some legislative power. And even that, even we are, you know, ACOG is up against Goliath trying to get proper compensation for preventative health for women and pregnant people. And so it is, as consumers, I don't necessarily have an answer for what consumers can do. That's why I left. I was like, I'm just too impatient. I'm an impatient person. So the idea of going up against Goliath and trying to like chip away my whole lifetime to like maybe see like a minuscule change, like that to me was like, there are people out there doing it and I'm so glad they are. It's not my personality. So I was like, you know, I'm going to circumvent this whole situation and I'm just going to go direct to the people and just serve them like where the holes are in our medical system. I'm going to start educating online. I'm going to start providing, you know, more of that personal touch. And yeah, I think it's a big task for consumers to try to go up against this system.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, I love your advice on how to like humanize your 10 minutes with your care provider. And then also I encourage people to like have those important questions or concerns written down, like on your phone or on a piece of paper. We still use pens and papers these days occasionally, but like maybe even that, holding it in your hand as opposed to just your phone to make sure.
The squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can always squeeze a couple extra minutes, not always, but very often if needs be. So that's so, so important. Well, I could just talk to you for hours, but I would love for you to share, you know, what you offer because, you know, there is more needed and we need to be mindful of where we take in information with there being so much available online. So why don't you tell us about the work that you do in Sterling Parents?
Yeah, so Sterling Parents is a membership for people who are moving through the reproductive journey, trying to conceive, pregnant, and we continue our support postpartum. Most of our members join when they're either trying to conceive or pregnant. And really, it's just a way for me to provide mostly, you know, the big thing is access to me. So they, we have a you know, private social media accounts, a private Facebook, private Instagram, where people can send me messages. And I check those every morning and throughout the day. And it's just, you know, it's all general education. You know, I'm not prescribing medication. I'm not telling people what they, you know, giving them medical advice and telling them what they need to do. They have questions like, what does this mean? What does that mean? And it's general education. A lot of people saying, wait, do I need to call my provider about this? Because everybody's afraid of calling with stupid questions and like stupid little things. And it's mostly me being like, yes. Yes, this is a very reasonable thing to contact your provider about, you know? So it's access to me through those venues. And then we also meet on Zoom several times a month. And it's what we call office hours. People come on Zoom and we talk face to face and, you know, we answer everybody's questions and it's mostly education. So it's like this issue of, well, my doctor wants me to do an early 1-hour glucose test. Like, is that just, are they just discriminating against me because of my size? Like, why do I have to do that? And that's my opportunity to sit down and like, okay, let's talk about this. Like, let's talk about why some people do early 1 hours and glucose tests and that kind of thing. So it's really just taking the opportunity for proper education and talking to people about their options.
I love that because there are options.
even with things like, baby aspirin, that's one of a common question that people bring to me. Like, my OB just told me to take this aspirin, but also I've heard you're not supposed to take aspirin in pregnancy. And like, what is this for? And so it's like, oh, okay, let's just sit down and explain it. And I can just see they come into office hours or they come into the direct message inbox and there's a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. And then it's like, okay, let's just talk about this. And it's such a, I mean, when I'm actually face to face with them, like I can see the stress relief. And to me, you know, as somebody who really cares about the whole human being, I really believe in taking away some of that overwhelm and that stress in pregnancy, because we know that it impacts pregnancy outcomes. So I want to give my members, we have this membership site where they can, a big library that has content different, about genetic screening and gestational diabetes and breech and like all of these big questions that come up, so that they can search that instead of Google. And then they also have that human touch of me and the other members of our team. And we have a lactation consultant, we have a pediatrician, we have a midwife. And so there is this whole wraparound support of human beings who just want to, everybody who works with Sterling Parents is an expert who just really believes in this mission of let's provide education, but also support. And so, we all love it. And I love working with the members of our community and this team. It's all, a bunch of moms who just want to support other people.
I love that. Where can people learn more about Sterling Parents?
So Sterling Parents, it's easy, sterlingparents.com. And I also have a really cool free class that is called 4 Ways to Make Your Pregnancy Easier and Healthier. And that's where we're really talking about some of this stress relief, because most of us are going to enter trying to conceive in pregnancy already pretty stressed and busy with life. And then pregnancy and trying to conceive is just more stress and more difficulty. Mm-hmm. And so I really am a big believer in this, the reproductive journey being a great opportunity to de-stress and to change our priorities and to, just make our lives better all around. And then specifically some interventions that we know can help with pregnancy outcomes. So that class is called 4 Ways to Make Your Pregnancy Easier and Healthier. And you can register at thebestpregnancyclass.com.
I love it. I will put all of that in the show notes. And I really encourage people to also follow Dr. Sterling at Dr. Sterling OBGYN to get a taste. I mean, you're getting a taste during our time together, but I love all your educational videos and I love the tone of your voice.
Oh, thank
you. I'm clearly not pregnant, but I need your de-stressing class right now. But you're so personable and approachable and you're fun and funny. And I just feel like we're friends. You know what I mean?
Listen,
like you have that.
With these reels, so I'm glad to hear that somebody else.
Yeah, you're a real person, and we need more of that. Like what we've talked about through our time together is this like power dynamic and struggle, and like how things have been for so long. But at the end of the day, you're a human. You're a mom, and I love the way that you show up. But you also show up with a lot of knowledge and compassion, and real drive and love for your community. So I really value you, and I'm really glad that we had this conversation. And while we clearly can't change time restrictions and power dynamics on a podcast episode, we can at least start to talk about them. And I think the more that we talk about these problems, I mean, problems enough that you left, this profession. And yes, you're doing your own thing, which is incredible and amazing. But like, we need more of you. Yeah. Like we need carbon copies of you, in the office, because it's so necessary. So how do we, there's so much burnout in the healthcare field right now. And then add a pandemic. Like I can't even imagine, like, is my son going to have access to, doctors when he's older and wants to build a family that are compassionate, or will they only get 5 minutes by that time? Like, it's scary. So I think it's important to have these conversations and to learn tools and resources.
Totally.
Like
and
you.
Can I just want to put a little bright light at the end of this.
Please.
The people who are coming up, the younger millennials and Gen Z who are coming up through the medical training, And they're now being trained by people like, you know, of my generation. And there is change coming, even without yes. changing like insurance companies and this whole healthcare system mess. The people who are entering it are more enlightened to these issues. And so even if consumers do nothing, the physicians themselves, the people who are coming up, are so much more enlightened to these different issues that there is hope. There is hope.
Oh, 1,000%. And I've seen it within my work. You know, I started in 2011 and now I have, you know, OBGYNs yeah. reaching out to me quite often, and that didn't happen for yeah. many years. And these younger people that want to have conversations, and it's so exciting to me. And it just like, there's this depth of caring about especially people in marginalized bodies, and it's so needed and so important, because when we look statistically what's happening, it's really yeah. horrifying and scary and sad, especially for Black people and people of color and people of size. So we really need to just know that there is change coming, but for many of us that doesn't help us now or tomorrow. So in the meantime, you can advocate for yourself and learn amazing tools with Sterling Parents, and definitely follow Dr. Sterling on Instagram. And I just adore you and I really appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I adore you too. The feeling is very mutual.
Well, thank you. Well, I will put everything in the show notes over at plusmommy.com. Until next time, bye.
Bye.